Well, welcome back to another episode of Sexy Marriage Radio. Alongside my wife, Pam. Good to see you again each and every day, babe.
Fantastic.
And for sure, each and every week when you're on the show. But I get the benefit of seeing you each and every day. And that's a blessing for me. That's for certain.
Well, thank you.
Well, this is Sexy Marriage Radio, where we're having straightforward, honest conversations about marriage, life. Today's particular episode is about the process of how do we pass this concept along to our children and our family in some ways.
What concept?
The concept of, I mean, the psychobabble term is differentiation, but the idea of just growing up, how do I handle myself, not situations, you know, because there's a truism that a lot of this is going to be built on today in today's episode, which is those that can't control themselves will seek to control everything around them. And we do this in a lot of different ways. And so we're going to talk about some specifics of how do we teach our kids this concept of just maturity, wisdom, growth, handling myself.
And is the key here more about even just your adult kids as opposed to
It's going to be
younger
both.
Ones across the board?
Right. Okay. It's going to be both. Because here's one of the things I think about when we look at just as we're raising children. Because what we're learning now that our kids are college age, some of the members of the nation are well ahead of us in this, that just because they're out of the house for big chunks of the year or completely out of the house in some of the other nation's situations, it's not like parenting's done. There's still an interaction. There's still a role. There's still a relationship.
Walk alongside them as adults.
How it looks is different, but you're still, the role you play is still a part of a life in some ways. And so understanding that matters. And so we're going to walk through what does it look like when they're young all the way up until they're adult. And we'll spend a lot of time on the adult world and in-laws, like son-in-law, daughter-in-law world.
Okay.
We'll do more of that in the extended content. But this is one of those that one of the beliefs that I think to kind of build this off of would be your kids don't need you to be calm. They need you to become calm and consistent and engaged. Because it seems like sometimes what I come across when I think of clients and even my own life, it's almost like I got to stay stoic in all situations rather than, no, how can I have my feelings and still become calm? How can I engage with a situation and still become calm and help lead that situation?
Okay.
Right? Because one of the main things that is incredibly contagious in families is anxiety.
Right. Yeah, no matter where you are, yeah, that gets contagious, yeah.
And so it's recognizing that when situations are going on in life, we'll start it this way. So here's a quick test for anybody that's listening and for us. We're going to go through this too at the same time. But when my child is upset, doesn't matter what age they are, but when my child is upset, do I become smaller, as in I'll find myself appeasing, or bigger, as in I'll find myself controlling, or steadier, as in I find myself being able to lead? Because if you think about it, when chaos ensues in life, what do? We usually do one of these three. We shrink, we expand, or we steady.
Yeah, I was trying to get the visualization. My quiet was trying to see the comparison of the three.
I'm with you.
Okay.
Because what happens, and this is why it's so important, particularly when you have little kids that are in your home regularly, or even older kids, or even adult kids that are interacting with you regularly, because anxiety is so contagious, our kids have really accurate maps of us. So they know and will feed off of how we deal with our world around us. And how we engage with the world around us. And so this is all about how do we figure out ways to handle ourselves better in situations because those in our family are watching us. This even happens to spouses as a quick little detour.
Well, this is for all relationships,
absolutely.
Is it not? I mean, we're I guess, trying to focus on the parent-child relationship at any stage, but it's really...
Mm-hmm.
every relationship.
Absolutely, because there's an element of when you are off balance or frustrated about something, it's very easy for me to feed off of that, and vice versa. If I'm down or ticked about something, it's very easy for you to feed off of that too. So it's the same kind of concept still plays out in a marital dynamic.
It does. There's a difference here in the marital dynamic. You expect the other person to be a grown up, and they've got it. Even if you're not reacting well, they should be in charge of their own reactions as well. But if you've got children, in particular minor children or people like that, they haven't learned it yet, right? And you're there to help guide them along in their transformation and their maturity as they... You're the example for
it. Right. And it's funny to me. I'm smiling as I'm listening to you talk through all this, because when you said when you're dealing with a spousal relationship, you're expecting the other person to be a grown-up, and that's presupposing you are a grown-up yourself.
Right. Well, right? I mean, that's what we talk about like every week, right?
Absolutely.
Ideally, you're both mature adults that are both trying to work on your own situation and not come in and control the other person or overreact or want to bring them down or all the different things.
Right.
Ideally, but there is some responsibility as a parent that you have for your children, for watching out for them, for helping them to help guide them through all their feelings and how they react to them.
And so this is where if you talk about trying to be a steadier person, let's just use that terminology. If I can just learn to steady myself in situations, so then I can figure out what I need to do in the situations. Because if I go to one extreme, I appease. And if I go to another extreme, I control. Another way to think about it, we've talked about this in various episodes too, is I'll overfunction or I'll underfunction. Same kind of concept. So it's just insert words here for the same dynamic. So instead it becomes, how do I become more solid or steady so that I can navigate situations? Because I've learned to navigate myself. And so all of this is also then, just to be a simple visual, this is what I use a lot, is the idea that when you're on an airplane and they talk about what happens if the cabin pressure goes out, oxygen masks will fall, and what's your primary responsibility?
Yeah, take care of yourself first.
Yourself first. And so it's learning, how do I do this and see that by doing this is a caring thing? And so when I pick up a child from school and they are wigging out about something and they are revved up, how do I steady myself but still allow them room to have their emotions, to feel their feels?
Yeah, to not come in and try and fix it for them, because they've got to figure out how to deal with those feelings.
And the counter to that also is, I will want them to just stop, to knock off the emotions, not just fix it for them. It's like, oh, it's not a big deal. Just grow up. It's okay. It's going to be fine. And we start using all these platitudes that are diminishing their emotions, and then they don't learn how to actually have their emotions. And then they're going to come out later in bad ways.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And so I have to model that, and I have to teach that, where it's this idea of, hey, I understand you're upset about this. I get it. It's okay to be upset about this. And that's okay, because I'm giving room. And when I'm steady, it gives them a container to experience that better and then figure out what to do with it. Because far too often we squash it because we just don't like the emotions they've got going on.
Yeah. Yeah. We know that it's overdramatic, but it's so easy to forget that they don't realize yet that something's not a big deal. Right. It's a big deal to them.
It's a big deal to them.
So it's a big deal.
We ran into this a lot when our kids hit middle school and high school, and they got into some things that were like, why is that important? But to them, it was important.
Yeah.
Because I'm forgetting, it was probably important to me when I was in that stage a little bit too.
Oh my gosh. I think of the first time that I did this to our daughter, and she wasn't even in school yet. She had a balloon. You remember this.
I remember this episode. Yes.
She had a balloon. It was cool. I don't know. It was a birthday party. It was something. I don't even remember. But we're coming home in the car. She had a helium balloon. It was shiny and beautiful. And she thought it was amazing. And we got out of the car. And it blew out of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And it went floating up in the air. And she lost it like I'd never seen her lose it in her life to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just looking at her like, what in the world? And I totally minimized it. I'm like, really?
It's a balloon.
It's just a balloon. It's no big deal. And totally minimized it. And she just, I mean, I think it starts from even little things like that, where we minimize that this is a big deal to them. And she needed to learn how to deal with that loss at that point.
She needed to feel what was associated with it, because in actuality, it was appropriate.
Yeah.
She was scared, hurt, sad.
Yeah.
A whole mixture of things that are going on because I lost something that was so cool.
Oh my gosh, I was so cold.
Well, I was too. I was right there with you. I'm like, it's all right. Well, let's just watch it. I'll try to make it an enjoyable something
else, which
is the same thing.
But I think that's where spouses, we can feed off of each other in that regard as well. And I think you fed off of me in a not so great way in that scenario. If you'd had the lead on that one, it probably would have gone way better.
Quick, get a rock. Let's see if we can pop it.
No, that would have been worse. That would have been a bad idea. But I mean, that's a superficial little example, but I think it's real.
The concepts are real, because that's what we're talking about. Is most of the time, I think we've got generations that don't really know how to handle emotions.
Yeah.
And so if we can start to look at this through a lens of, as a parent, if you can have a mindset, a kind of even an anchor phrase of, I can handle your feelings without feeling like I need to stop them. Or keeping you from having them.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's a difference. I mean, that's what I'll hear a lot is a kid gets really, really mad and then they become destructive. And so a lot of times what happens is we step in to try to deal with the destructiveness. And then what we will think of is, well, you need to stop getting mad.
Yeah.
Rather than, no, you can be mad in respectable ways. That's okay.
Yeah.
That's a good, healthy thing. Because emotions do come out. They will. We are made, and they will flood everything in our body. And that's one of the phrases. Can't remember the exact terminologies that go with it, but it's the idea of we have these logic brains and we have this whole rational logic that we do a lot of our life with, but then the emotional logic will burn the house down before the irrational logic even realizes what's going on. Right?
<Yeah. laughs>
Because it's just this flood of things that will hit you. And so let's kind of walk through this real quick for when you're talking about age frames. And we'll start.
What do you mean age frames?
Of how do you kind of look at this on developmentally speaking, on a chronological framework of age range, like the framework of, like, what are some foundations you would give to the 4 to 8 year olds?
Okay.
Right? Because before that, you're modeling. They're not, I mean, all of this still is concrete brain with kids. So they're not going to quite catch the abstract, but being consistent with your terminology will help with the concrete parts of this. And so it's be like, this is trying to help with some just emotional literacy and emotional education of, hey, these feelings are real. They matter. They absolutely do. It's okay to be mad about this. It's using those kinds of things to kind of give permission. And like, then it's this idea of, like, I think of parenting, tug of wars that happen with the whole, you can be mad about having to do a chore, but you still have to do it. Right. And just kind of starting to talk about the complexity of this thing. Just because you're upset doesn't mean you're out of a responsibility or a requirement or whatever. And then you have the chance to teach by how you model it, not lecture it. Because I think a lot of us as parents, I would have fallen into this early if I look back on my parenting. I would look for the teachable moments so that I could then teach, not just model. So I could explain. Let's talk about this whole thing. Let's dig in.
Yeah.
They're not going to get it at this point. This is a later on. you get a chance to have these conversations where you actually do teach a little differently. Okay. Mm. Then if you go a little bit older, so you're talking like 9 to 13-ish, we'll just kind of use that as a range. These are where that now they have abstract thinking. And so you're starting to help them define what's going on within them. What are they feeling? You're teaching them that it's the concept of the emotions you have. How can you help label them for them? How can you help collaborate with what their experience is? Because you'll have more of an understanding of what's going on that's fueling them. Because sometimes when they're under 8, it's concrete. It's so concrete, it's just a balloon. But when you're a little bit older, now you're getting into the abstract, and it's like, okay, why would that really, what emotions would that really elicit in my child? Because I know who they are. So how do I help them articulate what's going on while still maintaining some character with how they deal with it?
Do you have an example behind that?
I'm seeing a puzzled.
Because it's not going to be the balloon situation with that
this would be when you're going to get into some of the different arguments that can happen between parent and child. And it's like, you can disagree with me without the disrespect. Right? So now it's our interactions. It's not just parenting of situations. It can be, you can be mad at me without being disrespectful of me, without attacking me, without being belligerent about things.
Okay, so we're supposed to be talking about differentiation here.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just talking about
this is how
feeling the feelings.
But
I guess I'm not getting the whole picture.
Because what you're doing as far as teaching differentiation is you are modeling it only. That's all you can ever do. You can't teach it to somebody. You just model it. And then as they get older, it's likely they're going to catch some of what's being modeled better than what you teach. And then the concepts get a chance to get taught when the questions or situations arise, it's appropriate. But trying to teach a concept of differentiation to a teenager or even anybody in high school down, it's not going to be through words. It's going to be how you handle yourself.
Well, even using that word with an adult, they just go to sleep. Right. I mean, people listen to this podcast are like, what the hell are we talking about?
They can. And so then you're just, but this going back to the 9 to 13, this is starting to help them understand, okay, what's your part in the situation of what's going on? What's my part in the situation of what's going on? Right. What role do I play alongside you? What role do you need to play for yourself and for our family? Because now you're starting to talk about different broader responsibilities. You're handing over a little more responsibility to the kid for their own life.
Well, so they can start learning and being, here's what independence looks like.
And letting consequences be consequences that are of not of your doing. This is where you get into some of the love and logic stuff that's really good. The parenting, the scream-free parenting kind of concepts, which is really good. The let them theory from Mel Robbins talks about some of this, of it's a parenting aspect of how am I modeling stuff, but how am I also letting consequences be what consequences are. I don't have to step in and be the heavy. I can be someone alongside them.
Yeah, you can let the consequences be the heavy and not you. And they learn because they had to deal with the consequence rather than you saving them from it.
Right. And so then when you get older into the 14 to 18 range, so now they're getting ready to head off to college, then you're starting to talk about how are you helping them understand and broaden their capacity for the range of what's going on, because now they're more responsible for everything, because if you think about it, you know, the world just starts getting broader and broader for them on what they're able to start being interacting with, what they're responsible for, where you're handing over responsibilities for their life, for them, of these are the decisions you're going to need to make. And because there's still a framework and a safety net. And so it's helping them learn and be somebody consistent alongside when they get disappointed. How do they learn to deal with that? How do they learn to deal with other people's disapproval? Because this is one of the things that happens a lot in high school. Now all of a sudden the bestie doesn't like you for a moment, or boyfriend, girlfriend doesn't like you for a while, or your breakup, or the different things. How do you deal with those things that happen in their own relational dynamics as well as their own internal dynamics? How do they deal with some of the internal discontent, discomfort, uncertainty, insecurity about things.
I thought this was a really good time of life. And it was even in the middle school, the 9 to 13 age, but for sure in the 14 to 18 year old range, that you really start bringing home, the kids really start seeing other people in a different light. It's not just a playmate at that point.
Right.
They start seeing all kinds of things going on and realizing, oh, there's outside factors affecting how this person treats me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And realizing maybe they've got a tough thing going on at home and that's carrying over to them at school, or they've got XYZ going on, and starting to see the bigger human nature aspect of other humans as well. And I thought that was it.
Yeah.
I just see that as a big learning opportunity when we were with our kids and they had issues with friends or things they didn't see as consistent with people, whatever it may be, just them opening their eyes to, oh, this affects that.
Mm-hmm.
And which is a lot of what we talk about, like in the marriage relationship, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sex doesn't just stand alone on its own. I do or don't want to do it because of
this is related to that.
How I'm getting treated by my spouse, yep, in other arenas. Well, you know, outside of the sex factor, as they're growing up, they're starting to see how these things, A affects B affects C.
Mm-hmm.
And those are big, big learning opportunities.
Mm-hmm. No, they absolutely are. And this is also where, like we started in the beginning of the show, where our kids are mapping and paying attention to their parents and modeling things. You can also start to use this ability and even have opportunities to teach a little bit to your kids if you're into this kind of thought process.
Yeah.
Of what do you read with your friend that's going on with them that can be fueling some of this? So you help kind of position them to face it and steady themselves in the midst of stuff that goes on with their friends rather than be contagious and catching whatever their friends have too.
Yeah.
Because group socialization is huge in middle school and high school, where we feed off of our identity within a group.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole family theory that's out there that is important to realize the pressure that takes place because the parents get pushed aside a little bit. And so it's learning, how do I help my kid equip themselves to be engaged with their environment better and have understanding and being able to read what could be going on and then address what it is rather than just be taken off guard by everything.
Yeah.
Because that's possible, where it's like this idea of, I can help my kid. My job's not to help them avoid struggle and pain.
No.
Right? That's kind of the way that, if you look at the way society over generations is gone, you know, the helicopter parents came in and rescued, which then that bred snowplow parents that have just cleared the path for too many kids, that they don't face struggle. They don't face pain. And it's better to do that when consequences are relatively inexpensive, which is when you're younger.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if I grow up not having to deal with conflict, well, conflict is going to arise. How do I deal with it?
Right.
Just an epidemic of issues there.
So here's a couple of examples that happen in this stage, just to kind of help land this segment, if you will. It's the whole concept of what happens when a high schooler or even a college age kid is in a meltdown phase and you're trying to deal with something, you know, and they are just having none of it. They're totally just completely lost in their own emotions.
No logical train of thought.
So as a parent, you need to be more settled and steady to learn. I don't try to negotiate with a kid that's in that state. I just let that state be that state. I can deal with what we need to address later.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the phrase is like, hey, I'm happy to talk more after you've kind of worked through what all these things that you got going on in your feels are.
I mean, do you sit with them? Do you?
I think that's going to be contingent on kid. Because some would want that.
On their personality.
Some would not want that. Just let me be. Right? Because again, what we'll often do is I'll own me. I'll often, hey, how about go for a walk? I'll give all these suggestions that's not asked for.
Yeah, so shut your mouth.
Exactly. So instead it's like, hey, we will need to talk about this. But it's obvious right now the state between both of us or the state you're in is not a good time to do that.
So, I wouldn't phrase it that way, though.
So we'll pick it up later. Oh, you wouldn't?
No, that sounded kind of hot.
Okay. Well, that's fair.
Just my opinion.
That's perfect. That's perfect. And then you come back in after we kind of have settled down or you're steadier so that you don't get caught up in. Because every single one of us as parents has the kid that can get, man, they have direct access to the biggest buttons on us. And we'll get lit up so quick because of their phraseology, their statement, their whatever. And so it's like, I need to be better to kind of move into a situation. And if I'm not stable enough, then don't try to address it yet. Or collaborate with a spouse and use the strengths of each other.
The collaboration with the spouse is so important.
Yes.
I think, yeah, okay, you were ready to wrap this up, but I feel like I have to share a story.
No, please do.
Because
let's just keep going and give everybody the full show today.
Oh my gosh. And
let's do that.
If Sydney, if our daughter listens to this, I haven't even told her this. Yeah, I don't think she knows that when she was in high school, she had a boyfriend that, she had a boyfriend. They hadn't been dating very long. And for whatever reason, her phone was like linked to our iPad and I could see all of her text messages.
Oh, yeah.
I don't advise this, but for about a week, I was reading the text messages.
Oh, I remember.
And I got myself worked up about, really it was about me. It was a text message about me saying that we had gotten into a big fight and like she was trying to get sympathy from the boyfriend and we had not gotten in a fight. Like we had had a good conversation the night before. I was ticked. Like, because it was degrading me. It was like making it look like I had blown up at her and I had gone over the top. And I was like, what the heck? I thought I did a really good job the night before. And I just wanted to storm in there. Thank goodness, though, for you. Calming that situation, like putting the pedal on it. And, you know, I just stopped reading the text messages because it was no good. It did me no good. I have no idea why she did that.
It was her iPad for a while. She had gotten access to it. And
I'm not talking
I'm
not talking about that, the connection. But who knows why
Right. Your
16 or 17-year-old says some of the things they say, right? They're looking for acceptance or attention
It is a big dust up between the two of you in their mind. It is one that they see it as a bigger deal than it was, or that it's just the story that we tell ourselves. And yes, it can be exaggerated, but it's important to realize there are two interpretations to every interaction.
Yes.
And they both are real.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we can get caught in facts about everything and lose all of this to where it kind of then comes back to, okay, how do we address some of the things, or do I even need to?
Well, that's just it. There's some of them that do you need to, do you not? How you respond, how you react to things sets the tone, right?
It absolutely
does.
It
sets the tone and it shows them, it's the example of what you do or don't do.
And some of the ways our kids and family members interpret our interactions is based on truth too. Maybe not in that moment, but over the entirety, because they have an accurate map. They know who we are.
Yeah.
They know where I'm blind to myself.
Yeah.
They know these things. And so, yeah, they can use it to their advantage, because I sure do.
Yeah.
in my mental talk.
Right.
So it's, yeah, absolutely. This is the reality of, okay, so as you're dealing with these interactions, it really just continually keeps coming back to, how do I handle me? How am I adjusting to the situation? How am I adjusting to their age chronologically, their maturity chronologically, their responsibilities, their exposure to the world, whatever it might be? Because the overarching goal is launch kids to be self-sufficient, tax-paying citizens, interacting in relationships, and living a vibrant life as they define that. And that may not be the same way I define what I want for them.
It may not be.
But it's understanding that, you know, we can get so caught up in this whole over-functioning, under-functioning, or perception management. Like, because that situation could have become a big, huge fight. Like, I can't believe that you thought I blah, blah. And now you're just fighting about facts. And your memories of the situation.
And I would have regretted it had I gone and done that. Mm-hmm. The reality is I would have regretted it because mm-hmm. I would have known I'm supposed to be the grown up here.
Right.
How do I act? But now beyond that, right, when you got the older kids.
Right. Right. Because then when you get into where if they're out of the house now for college or big chunks, or they've moved out and they have their own jobs and
Own family, even.
I think at this part of the stage, now you're talking about this is doing life alongside them. Mm-hmm. And I loved, you and I both just finished, or you're almost wrapped up with the Mel Robbins Let Them Theory book.
Yes. If you people that are listening have not listened to the Let Them Theory, it's fantastic.
It's a great read. She's doing a lot of the same thing we're talking about here. It's the exact same kind of concepts. But she makes a statement, which I loved, and this was more aimed at the adulting children that are still reliant upon parents financially, mm-hmm. that in that situation, as parents, we still have access to their lives and can have a take on their life because they rely on us for something. Doesn't mean I have control. Doesn't mean I have carte blanche. I can do whatever I want. It just means I still want to know what's going on.
If you want the benefit of my checkbook... Mm-hmm. Then I have a right to be involved.
We have a relationship still to that
happening.
Degree. I loved her statement, spoiler alert, if you're going to read the book or listen to it. I love the statement that she said, and kids, if you're listening to this and you don't want your parents' take on anything, then fine. Be completely self-sufficient and self-supported.
Get a job. Take care of your school. Take care of everything else.
You can handle your interactions with them however you want to. Right? And so... if you look at it like that, that's just the same kind of concept of how am I living life alongside somebody while still modeling somebody that's respectable and loving and would be a joy to want to be around.
Yeah.
Which is what we want to do with all our adult relationships in my mind.
Yeah, it is. But you think of that scenario, the words we just said, if you haven't listened to what's in that book, it also sounded like, well, okay, I can manipulate to try and control my kids by supplying them with money and so you don't want to do that.
That's the overfunctioning.
That is not what mm-hmm. is being talked about here. They've got to grow up. Mm-hmm. And how do you continue to model being a grown up, mm-hmm. independence, dealing with disappointments, dealing with struggle.
Let the struggle start to teach more because
let
it's
the struggle teach
than,
it. Yeah, the right. consequences. You gotta allow the consequences to teach the lesson.
Right. So I want to pivot, and we're just going to give everybody the whole show. So surprise, this will be fun for everybody to have a chance to hear the whole lifespan, in a sense, is kind of where we're going to go. And so I want to pivot to some of the thoughts. This is not a situation we're in at all at this point at the recording, but where now all of a sudden your son or your daughter comes home and there's an engagement in the works. Or you're in a situation where you already have a son-in-law or a daughter-in-law, because this creates a different dynamic, right? Because now you have a different family overlapping your family that's while they're trying to create their family. Mm-hmm. And I think those are huge distinctions, that they are creating their family. They are not replicating yours.
Yeah.
And so you, as an adult, I can already see some of the angst I will have to face on... Mm-hmm. You guys are going to do that way. Okay. good luck, you know, because it's not the way, it's not the way I would want to do it, or what we used to do, or what all these different things that we will often do and impart as wisdom, when in reality, that's just what we did. They got to figure it out on their own.
Yeah.
They've got to do that. And so what do you do as a father or a mother for an in-law, a son-in-law or a daughter-in-law, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's a couple of things on this dynamic that I think are important, because one of the thoughts, this was spurred on by a conversation I had with a good friend just this last week, where we were talking about kids that are in some significant relationships and projecting forward. What do you do if the son, the future son-in-law, comes and asks for her hand in marriage? And what got this thought process to me is, if I have some major concerns and he's coming to ask me and I haven't already gotten ahead of some of those concerns with that young man, I haven't done my job on walking alongside both of them well, him and her. And this taking out of the equation, you don't know them yet because they've moved off. They've been gone for a long time from your, you know, they've been on their own single for a long time. And now all of a sudden you're meeting somebody that they chose as an adult. I'm kind of using this as a younger adult, college age stage that we're kind of in at this point.
Yeah. It's funny because the way that sounded just now, it was like you're trying to control the situation.
Well,
is what it sounded like.
It would mean if I have some concerns about a dynamic that I'm seeing between my daughter and a boyfriend.
Yeah.
It's kind of, if I'm walking alongside them and trying to be a good relationship with them, I would bring up some of those, not demanding that they do other things differently or whatever, but just, hey, have you recognized, this is modeling what it looks like to be more steady about things. Because if you see some major volatility, guess what's going to happen when they're married? Major volatility. I mean, couples that I've worked with over the years where, yeah, we broke up 5 times before we got married. Oh, it tells me one or two things. You guys don't address problems, or you address them really poorly. So how do you start changing that dynamic? Right. And so when you can look at it of, how do you start to pour into a future in-law for one of your children?
And I think that's just it. Pour into it positively.
Exactly.
You're not going to him to say, oh, I see this problem between the two of you.
No. And
that's,
I don't want to give that perception
helpful
at all.
That's what it sounded like.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Well, because I'm hearing it just as, how am I, like, because what I think about, we've already talked about Sydney. So whenever Sydney has a serious that looks like this could be going on into married life type of a relationship, one of my thoughts is, this is her choice. And so what I'd want to do and kind of communicate to the young man is, one, just pour into him as another man, just as a brother in Christ.
Mm-hmm.
But also be worthy of her choice of you. Be the man worthy of that on how you carry yourself. If there's a problem, don't play games. Address it with her. And handle when she brings them to you.
How do you model that?
I think it's the conversation that you have over the relationship dynamic of, as you get into where it's more serious. I think of back when we were dating and then moving into marriage, I was paying attention to your father. I was never intimidated by him. He was never that kind of a man. But I paid attention to how he interacted with people, looking back at it.
Yeah.
How he carried himself.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things you kind of want to aspire to. And I think if I was having conversations with him, this is kind of the stuff I'd want to hear.
Yeah.
But it's just the concept of, how are you modeling, one, our marriage? Because anybody that's new is paying attention.
Yeah.
But then two, how we are incorporating our relationship with them, not just as they are an and one with our child.
Yeah.
Right. Because I think that's how you start to see a dynamic that can start to shift and then really trickle into their life differently on just dealing with the struggles.
Yeah.
Because the other thing I think that matters, and this is for both fathers and mothers, is as this is like, let's do this even like there in, during the wedding, first several months, years of the marriage, in the married life, I think there's this element of how do you communicate by the way you conduct yourself, and then you maybe even have the conversation of, if I have a problem with you as a son-in-law, I'm going to come to you. I'm not going to go to your wife. I'm not going to go. I'm not going to complain about it with my wife.
Well, it's just like any other relationship, right?
That if there's something between us, then let's deal with that.
Yeah.
And then the other side can also be, I'm not going to show favoritism of them over, you know, and it's just that kind of concept of how do I let them be their own unit, mm-hmm. if you will, as a family, rather than, because all of us are still going to have a tendency of, I'm going to take sides. You know, if I get a phone call at some point, I'm going to take a side. It's just bias, natural, normal human thing. But how, if I'm grown up and steadier, I have an opportunity to be steadier in how I approach a situation that's hopefully beneficial for both, rather than ostracizing right off the bat.
I think that's huge. To encourage, if we take sides or bash one, you know, the spouse or whatever, what a terrible example.
Right.
I mean, the whole point is your kids getting into this relationship that is their own family, mm-hmm. and wanting to encourage that to last.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got to know that we're on the side of a healthy marriage from both of them working at it.
And I'm on the side of both of them becoming healthy.
Yes.
Right, because then the relationship's coming along, and those can be switched, you know, back and forth. The relationship can get healthier, which will challenge you to be healthier. But then there's, I think the last thing that I think about is also this whole concept of how do we model, demonstrate, and communicate when needed, that there's an element of, it's just that articulating, this is your relationship. You guys are building your family, your marriage, your life. We're alongside. We're not somebody that's above and here's what you have to do. Here's the dominating. Here's the, because how often we get caught up in family traditions that they have to be honored rather than what if they don't want to? And we guilt trip them.
Mm-hmm.
And we make subtle passive aggressive statements. I mean, that's what I'm afraid of for me, is I can be pretty passive aggressive. I know that. And so how do I make sure I stay engaged and neither passive or aggressive with how I interact with stuff? Because it's the idea of how do they cultivate their own life as they, because if they really do, as they grow and mature and evolve, they will push back on us too. And that's okay.
What do you mean they will push back on us?
On if there is a, you know what, this year we're not going to be able to make it to whatever the thing is, this the normal tradition. And here's why.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a reactionary. It's just that this is a decision we're making for our family.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the big thing. We faced this when we had kids, because it now all of a sudden it became, you know what? On some of the main holidays, I think I want to just stay at the house and not travel to see family, which is what we'd been doing all the years prior.
Mm-hmm.
And we get some underhanded pushback and feelings associated with that, which are real and understandable. But that's part of growing up, is evolving to handle those things better, to realize, hey, this is lives evolving and changing. And now how do we make sure those lives still stay alongside each other as much as we can?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I can't control it, but I also don't want to just write it off. 'Cause that seems to be at this stage, this is the biggest thing I would see from clients. Over-involved, controlling, meddling, etc., or completely cut off. Well, because you didn't do what I want.
Okay. So they cut him off because, not necessarily because of a spouse, just that they're not following through on family traditions,
right,
or whatever.
Or I felt disrespected. I felt hurt.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing I hear and see is the triangulation that happens.
What do you explain that?
So I have a problem with you, and I triangulate with my mom about you.
Okay.
Or my dad about you.
So I'm teaming up with a parent about my spouse.
Right.
Gotcha.
And then the umbilical cords aren't cut ever. And it continues to make this tension, because that's an incredibly difficult upward battle for you to ever deal with well, if that's the case.
Sure.
Because you have all the other history still built in, plus the protectiveness, favoritism, blood all, right? So it just changes everything. So instead of, that's why I love the concept of, this is you guys dealing with your life. We want to be alongside it, but we don't have a say in it.
Yeah.
Particularly uninvited.
It's interesting to think about this. So many times, we're welcoming the new son-in-law or the new daughter-in-law into our family.
Welcome to our family.
Welcome to our family. And to have that perspective shift that, congratulations, I'm changing the wording, congratulations on the two of you starting your own family.
Mm-hmm. What a thrill it's going to be alongside that as the journey goes.
Yeah.
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 That's good, because I was always wondering, how do I even start to articulate that when the time goes? Because it's so easy and natural. Hey, welcome to the family. Rather than,
I mean, they are now part of the family.
They are.
But it's that that's not the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, their own stability, steadiness, growth, impact, vibrancy, that's what I would want for our kids, is chart your course. Do it alongside a person you love. And I'd love to watch all that.
Mm-hmm.
And be engaged as needed, as necessary, as invited.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But only when invited. And because I'll also invite them back into ours on things too. And that's the collaboration of just what we do as adults.
Well, you say only when invited. Don't you think sometimes people don't want to have to invite all the time?
It's kind of a metaphorical component to it, of rather than just the expectation that I have.
Don't be the in-law that shows up at the door unannounced.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I mean, it's just that element of be open about what's going on. I mean, it's this, you and I have talked about this. So let's end it with this. We've talked about this before, just you and I, on when, as our kids have gotten older and now the schedules are getting to where we don't have the ability to, hey, here's vacation for the summer. We're scheduling it. We're all going. And it's just unexpected. It's going to be more and more, hey, we're going to schedule this trip. If you guys can come, we're happy to have you come join us. And you said, and I'll agree completely with it, is I'm totally okay trying to bribe my kids to come on vacation with me.
Yeah, I'm totally
because financial
good with
differences
that.
Will be different.
I'm totally good
as
with
they're
that.
Starting their life, that I'm totally good paying to get them to come hang with me some.
Yeah.
Yeah. If that's what it takes.
Yeah.
But even in the midst of that, just because I've paid to have them come join me on a vacation doesn't mean I have the right to demand how they handle themselves and what they do with us on that vacation. They may choose to do something I don't want to go do, or not want to do something I want to go do.
Yeah.
And it's going to be very easy to be controlling of, well, but hold on, rather than wait. That's a choice I made.
It's what I signed up for.
So I'm going to be an adult about it, and I'm going to be steady about it. I'm going to allow the room for, oh, yeah, cool. You guys have fun. We'll see you at dinner. And then move on. Have a good day. Make the most of it. And that's adulting. That's maturing. That's character driven.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole goal. And so it starts all the way through. But again, it always comes back to, I model it. I live it. That's how it's caught. And then we get the opportunities throughout the times where it gets taught, because we get to have a conversation where it's debriefing, questions that are asked. They're facing something similar that they've seen us go through. We get a chance to talk a little bit. Then it's teaching a little differently.
But only when they're asking for it.
Yep, because otherwise I'm offering something that's uninvited.
And it's not going to be listened to.
That goes back to the phrase you love to say, is we help those and ask for help. Because otherwise, I'm just butting in. Well, this has been Sexy Marriage Radio. However you took some time out to spend with us, thanks. And we'll see you next time.